Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Greetings, podcast fans. It's the best monkey tennis Tom here, Tom Dark. This week, it's my turn to delay your listening pleasure for just a few seconds and remind you that we now have a Ko-fi page. This is just a little something that we've set up so you can show your appreciation for the podcasting we're doing, have done and will do in the not so distant future. All you need to do is go to ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. That's ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. And once you're there, you can donate the price of a coffee or multiple coffees. The choice is yours. We've been researching, dissecting and celebrating everything Partridge for over 4 years now. Staggering, we know. If you've enjoyed listening and you're willing to overlook our numerous mistakes and errors, any donation, large or small, will really help us continue to dissect whatever comes next in the APU and for us to continue to be better and more sought after broadcasters. Nothing changes with the pod. It's simply a way for you to show your support for the cream of our discharge. Thanks a lot. We love you. In a way. Producer Jed, you can press play now.
Welcome to Knowing Me, Knowing You. Knowing me, Alan Partridge. Knowing you, the audience. I've got a hit on my hands.
Monkey tennis?
Was that good therapy or balmy old cack?
Conrad Knightson.
Monkey tennis?
I'm Alan Partridge.
Why are you such a dick?
Lots of meaty chat.
Monkey tennis?
I just want you to admit that you hate Les Dennis.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
Monkey tennis?
Okay, I'm in Manhattan. What do I do now? You are a little shit.
Monkey tennis?
That in England is a whore.
I've taken drugs!
Lord Morgan.
If you speak again, I will physically hit you.
And on that bombshell...
Monkey tennis?
Thank goodness it's radio. I never thought I'd say that.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we're taking a journey through Knowing Me, Knowing You, the radio series. I'm Adam Brooks and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Build a tree. Don't cut it down, for goodness sake.
Nick Holder.
That last aha was tinged with sadness.
And Tom Stab.
Why aren't there more youth programmes? So, my quote was actually, build a tree, don't cut it down, for goodness sake, as well. But I had a backup quote just in case.
Because you so come prepared.
I do.
Unlike some other members of the team.
Who literally picked their quote about 30 seconds ago.
Let's move on.
I give you a little clue, listeners. You might notice that somebody in the team, their quote at the start of the show normally comes from the first minute of the programme because they're scrolling through in a panic before we hit record.
So today we're looking at episode 6, the last in the series of Knowing Me, Knowing You, the radio series. Tom Dark, when did this originally go out?
So excitingly, we are now into 1993. This was the 5th of Jan, 93,
or as episode 6. As I like to think of it, the era of Ace of Base. Actually, sure. No, I think that might be 94. Should we quickly find
you've got to have a basic knowledge of Ace of Base if you're going to do an Alan Partridge podcast.
The entire 90s is the era of Ace of Base, correct. As far as I'm concerned. So yeah, as Nick's quote suggested, Alan comes on and says, gives an aha, but he says, the more observant listeners would have noticed that the last aha was tinged with sadness. Presumably, that's the first mistake. Observant presumably refers to sight. You can't be an observant listener.
Good point.
He's buggered it from the...
I don't know, is that splitting hairs? I think that's maybe fine. You can make an observation. It doesn't have to be visual.
I think that's a deliberate error that they've put in the script. Mm. Observant listeners.
So Alan, is it actually in negotiations for a second series? It's revealed. The BBC say the current deal is fine. Alan says things change. So in theory, he could have had a second series of his radio show.
Oh yeah, if he'd been satisfied with that.
If he'd been satisfied, yeah. He would have got a second series.
And as he says, in this business, people become hot, and then goes into some crazy mixed metaphors. Kid gloves, oven gloves, hot property, just throwing terms at the wall here.
And I quite like that. Even in the early days, Alan can't master the art of a metaphor or a simile, can he? It's always not. A mess. I don't know, actually, because saying we're in negotiations for a second series, does that mean the negotiation is them asking for one and the BBC are saying, it's fine, as in, we've had one series and that's fine? It's actually a little bit unclear, isn't it?
My interpretation of that is that BBC are saying that there can be a second series, but the deal isn't going to change, and Alan is already getting ideas above his station, despite the fact that a lot of things have already gone wrong in this series.
Definitely asking for more money.
Yeah, it's staggering to think that this would be recommissioned when you consider all of the people that have been either assaulted or verbally abused on the show.
And it's only going to get worse in this episode.
I wonder what extent life imitates art here, because he says that BBC TV are on the lookout for the next big TV chat show. So I wondered if by this point Coogan, etc. knew that Know Me, Know You was going to make it to TV and they were teeing it up with a radio show, or whether... it's more a case of Alan says he wants a TV show, and then thereafter they start the real life planning for Know Me, Know You.
So obviously this is 92/93. The Know Me, Know You TV show was broadcast in September 1994. So a couple of years, about 18 months or so later, about 20 months later.
Mm. I also wondered maybe if this was even a bit of a meta play from the writers and creators of Know Me, Know You Radio to try and get themselves a TV series.
Yeah, I wonder if that almost fits looking back, but I wonder if the time, if it was that clever, but either by hook or by crook, that's sort of the way that it's played out.
Yeah, totally. So Tony Hares is the guest, and I'm glad for backwards continuity purposes that it is David Schneider as Tony. He'll later be taking calls from listeners about the BBC, which I thought when I first heard that, it seemed a great opportunity to plant Lynn. But obviously, I guess Lynn doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Or she's reverse engineered into she's technically on the scene at this point, yeah. But they haven't invented her.
Yeah, yeah. We don't actually see or hear of Lynn until I'm Alan Partridge, do you? Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my premonition about there being a plant did turn out to be true, although sadly not Lynn. So I mean, you could argue really Tony is as significant a part of the APU as someone like Simon or Lynn. When you think about it, he's across more properties. I'm Alan Partridge, Know Me, Know You Radio, TV, iPartridge, and arguably has had more steer over Alan's career than anybody else, for better or worse.
He's a very pivotal character, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't really strike me until I listened to him on this that actually, yeah, he's been kind of steering Alan's career for better or worse the whole way.
I was just having a quick flick through Easily Distracted, about wondering about
Which is Steve Coogan's autobiography.
Yep. I couldn't find actual clarity on kind of the timeline within it being radio to TV, but it looks like the conversations were happening that at the same time they were basically developing Know Me, Knowing You, the radio show, they were already in discussions that On the Hour was going to transfer to TV as a day-to-day. Mm. So I would imagine like the leap of Know Me, Knowing You, the chat show developing to TV, that probably was kind of on the cards if they were already talking about the day-to-day as well.
The day-to-day was a year after this. That started broadcasting in January 1994.
So to read from the book here, Coogan writes, as well as the radio show, Patrick and I were filling in his backstory for Know Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge, and On the Hour was transferring to television as the day-to-day. There was a discussion about which should be shown first, the day-to-day or the Partridge chat show. Introducing Alan to television as part of an ensemble cast is perfect. So the day-to-day started on BBC in early 94 and his chat show went out later that year.
That makes sense. Yeah, so it's almost strategic that in both in the radio and then in tandem on TV, they first introduce Alan as part of an ensemble project and then they bring out his own thing.
Yeah.
But equally with the TV, Know Me, Knowing You, they've got the added bonus that people are already familiar with the concept from the radio show. So it's kind of set up perfectly.
Yeah. It reads to me like essentially the radio show was a massive hit from the off. So I think immediately the BBC must have been keen to keep on developing it to a larger property.
So taking it back to this, you're saying that Alan was right when he said that people become hot and yes, this was yes. hot.
He really was, yeah.
Just clear.
There's also some nice subtle digs about the BBC in general here where he's talking about the BBC's values and then lists the programmes that they represent. So for example, originality, quality, excellence, Noel's house party.
I go home, sit down, and I think I want originality, quality, and excellence. I watch Noel's house party, and I say, thank God for the BBC.
There's also a bit of a meta dig at the BBC about the fact that they passed on the Darling Buds of May and claiming that it got 20 million viewers. I mean, we mentioned Darling Buds of May in a previous episode, but we do believe I think it was that popular.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think I don't know how much of it is a dig or just Alan ignorance or a bit of both around Alan, you know, citing shows like Morse, The Bill, Darling Buds of May as great BBC output when in fact it's obviously
ITV. It's three of the four shows he mentions are ITV, aren't we?
So as a kind of utterly middle of the road, ultimately not very good comedy starring David Jason, Nick, I assume you're a fan of the Darling Buds of May.
I did watch it growing up, for sure. I don't know if I'd rewatch it. I feel like it probably hasn't stood the test of time. I feel like it's pretty dated. I couldn't even tell you what it was really about. Didn't they like live on a hot
farmers?
Farm? Yeah, it looks like farmers in Kent.
Farmers.
It was basically, like just people having an idyllic rural lifestyle.
Yep, I'm interested. Tell me more. Yep. Get it on Amazon Prime now.
So with Noel's house party, it's definitely worth noting this is the first mention of Edmonds in the APU. And obviously it's the first kind of subtle dig at Edmonds, but it's more the writing team having a pop as opposed to Alan having a pop at this point. So I think at this point, Edmonds is very much a broadcaster that Alan is looking up to because he's seeing the success and the viewing figures of Noel's house party. But we know that things later develop and the hatred grows.
And the reality is that this is probably nothing more than the writers having a slight subtle dig about what Saturday night primetime TV was at that point.
Yeah.
Little did they know that years down the line, it would spiral into a bitter rivalry between Alan and Noel that they have essentially produced themselves.
Mm. And again, it's kind of links quite well to the poptastic Tony Blackburn autobiography that I mentioned the other week, when I think he fell out with Edmonds or starts to become disgruntled with Edmonds because I think Edmonds took over on the Radio 1 breakfast show from him.
Right.
So there's a bit of a rivalry in Tony Blackburn's book. So again, I'm pretty sure the Gibbons brothers would have seen that as an opportunity to bring that rivalry to the fore in iPartridge as well.
So in the studio, Alan's taking calls or Tony's taking calls. The first one comes from Steve from Hornsey in London, who simply asks Alan, why are you such a tit? You've got to assume for Steve to have known that there was a phone in, he must be a regular listener. Is there such a thing as someone who's called in because they're just a huge fan of Tony Hares? I mean, you know, I suppose it's like, you know, back in the kind of Greg Dyke days of the BBC, I suppose he's a big enough figure that there would be people who were fans of his, I guess, and would call in.
But also, I guess it's the opportunity for a BBC listener, viewer to kind of air their views. Very much like Points of View used to be a hugely kind of watched thing on the BBC. So it's an opportunity. I mean, this caller Steve is asking, saying how much he loved the Duchess of Duke Street and asking kind of where he can see that. So, you've got to think it's pre-internet. So that kind of to have a dialogue with somebody who's in control of things at the BBC, you know, these days people might just fire off an abusive tweet at somebody, whereas that was how you would have to do it.
And it would be, I guess, a bit more of an event, which explains why you've got people that hate Alan listening to and calling into his show because it's their only opportunity to talk to a BBC pro.
I enjoyed that Alan obviously apologises, but says they have no control over that, which obviously they do. They can screen the calls if they wanted to, but the point is they haven't.
Well, this gag is brilliant because Steve says, why are you such a tit? And then it transpires he hasn't been cut off. So you've got Alan going, why hasn't he been cut off? And we actually see that joke that's kind of repeated with callers in I'm Alan Partridge and also callers in Mid Morning Matters. And I don't know, you could be like, oh, it's a bit lazy, it's being recycled. But I think that joke, every time they do it, is brilliant. Mm. So I've got no problem with it being reused.
Yep. Did anyone else have to look up the Duchess of Duke
Street?
Yeah,
I'd never heard of it either.
No. But yeah, I like that. So Tony Hare says that you could possibly get it on VHS.
Yep.
You can buy it on VHS on eBay for $6.99 plus $4.99 postage and packaging. So if Steve wants it, it's on eBay.
Kerry from Wimbledon calls in next to say, why aren't there more youth programmes?
Why aren't there more youth programmes?
To which Alan's response is he tries to sort of reframe Know Me, Knowing You as a youth programme, but his justification for that is because Simon Bates likes it. Simon Bates was 47 years old at the time this went out in 1993.
And remember, not two shows ago, Alan was confirming that most of the listeners are infirm. But now it's part of youth programming.
They got a bit lucky with the reference of Simon Bates, didn't they? Because they could have mentioned someone else and it could have gone very, very wrong when they say he's certainly got his finger on the nub of youth.
Oh. Now then, wow. Let's not get into that. Amanda from Southampton calls to say that she heard Know Me, Knowing You as a consequence of her listening to Radio 4 all the time. And Alan has hit a child, gambled his wife's car, taken cocaine, bribed rent boys, and there's been open homophobia. But she does get his name wrong, so Alan then just corrects her on that point, but the rest of it is fair enough, he thinks.
Now, I actually think Amanda's list is fairly lenient with Alan. I tried keeping a list of what I just termed as bad things that happened throughout this series. So shall I give you my list and see if you think I've missed anything?
Yes.
Slightly more detailed. I mean, Amanda's got the core things down, but I've gone from episode one, he chastises a guest for not winning a Nobel Prize. He seems surprised a female guest is capable of being attractive and intelligent. He accuses a guest of running sweatshops. He implies a guest fraternises with 11-year-old boys and accuses a guest of being infertile. That's just episode one. Episode two, slaps a child, disrespects hypnotherapy as a legitimate profession, is openly homophobic to a guest and calls another guest a nobody. Episode three, takes cocaine. Episode four, calls a member of the royal...
smelling salts.
Episode four, calls a member of the royal family a junkie, threatens to hit a guest, and bribes rent boys to reveal a scandal live on air.
I would say that the member of the royal family is a junkie, though. He doesn't accuse him. They are a junkie. They go to rehab.
Fine. Yep.
I don't think that's bad. That's fact.
Well, I think the point is more like in a broadcast level, saying that about a member of the royal family, it's a bad thing.
He accuses the royals of getting absolutely rat-arsed.
Exactly. Bad broadcasting. Episode five, he's sexually inappropriate to the female co-host. He tells an anti-Semitic joke and gambles and loses two cars. And episode six, which obviously we will get through these things, but you have the fake call to the BBC commissioner. It says his female guests look like whores. And of course, spoiler alert, a guest dies mid-interview, which arguably
isn't
Alan's fault. But I'm just saying, in terms of bad things that happen and it being a bad broadcast experience, it all adds to the list.
So what I'm saying,
Have I missed anything?
What I'm thinking is, from the list that you've just gone through, absolutely put him on the television. It's going to be brilliant.
Definitely give him a second series.
Amanda from Southampton wraps up her hit list on Alan by saying he's also patronising to all his female guests, which Alan replies, have you got a question, dearie?
Obvious gag, that, I think.
It works. Mm.
And he also tries to justify the hitting a child by saying, in the cut and thrust of a chat show, people are going to get hit.
Oh, I did also note with Kerry, the caller before, when he says, do you like the show? She just replies, no. Which again is a kind of gag that we've seen happen a few times before. Like, for example, the estate agent in I'm Alan Partridge is like, do you watch the show? No.
Yep.
Just that it's a consistent thing. People just shrug and have no idea what he's talking about.
And the abruptness of that is quite similar to Roy from Bungie. No, we go to Legoland. Bye. So finally, we get a sympathetic caller for Alan, but it's because it's Alan's plumber, John, who basically reads from a script that Alan's prepared, offering the TV show for $75,000, which I thought, in the scheme of things, I mean, even for a bad TV show, that does seem a very low fee in order to set the entire thing up.
So it's a good deal. They should go for it.
I think so, yeah.
There's almost no development fee needed.
You'd be transferring direct from radio. You wouldn't have to pay Pear Tree Productions a large development fee.
Exactly.
I also thought this might be a stretch, but Alan's plant is obviously his plumber, John. Is it possible that this is a John who then goes on to acquire some additional skills and then make Alan's house in I'm Alan Partridge Series 2?
Yes.
John the Builder.
I like it, but no, because obviously at the end, Alan says, thanks very much, Jason from Norwich. So it's clearly Jason the researcher. We know the researcher team are Jason and Lisa.
Oh, got you.
This bit's a bit silly, isn't it? It jumps the shark a bit, I think.
It's so
obvious that it's a plan. I think it jumps the shark a little bit personally.
But I think it's good because it's layering the whole Pear Tree production stuff, which obviously pays off further series.
That's good. That admittedly is good. But when it transpires, it's obviously a plan. There was no way he was going to be able to get away with this. I don't know why he thought he would be able to. It just didn't quite work for me.
I don't know. I think it's really funny because, again, it's that sort of thing where the audience is a little bit ahead of the joke, perhaps. It's very obvious what's going on.
This has reminded me a bit of a Partridge program that I would love to see made, but has never actually happened. And that is some kind of behind the scenes documentary at Pear Tree Productions, especially kind of poking fun at like companies that have, you know, huge umbrella corporation titles, but actually there's like three people there, and that sort of thing.
And they're all working out of a Regis.
Yeah, I think it would be great.
They will hammer you on the small print.
So I think to summarise with the Tony Hare section here, he barely gets a word in or a chance to respond to callers because Alan is very much like driving this. So really what Tony Hare's learns is that people hate the show. People hate Alan. And Alan has placed a plant for Pear Tree to give him the hard sell on the second series. So it's not been a great experience. I don't think Alan has achieved quite what he wanted to do.
So quickly going back to Amanda Southampton from Southampton, this section where she describes Know Me, Knowing You as the most insidiously offensive programme that she's ever heard is a little bit of a mirror of something that happened in real life, which we mentioned in a previous episode, but we're going to go into a bit more detail now. Someone actually wrote in to the BBC where after hearing the show broadcast, I think we said it went out at 6:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Who thought that the show was actually real and they wrote a letter of complaint. So that's covered in Steve Coogan's autobiography, right?
In Easily Distracted, yeah. So I can read it here. Steve writes, I had letters of complaint from listeners who thought it was real. I have one such letter framed in my downstairs toilet. Good detail there. So actually, this letter was addressed to Armando Iannucci. December the 9th, 1992. Dear Mr. Iannucci, I was appalled by yesterday's 6:30 p.m. Alan Partridge broadcast. If this is the level to which Radio 4 has sunk, the BBC is in need of real help. The Simon Fisher interview, an interview is in inverted commas, was tasteless and cruel. Partridge's only means of countering the intellect of a quite exceptional 9-year-old child was to ridicule him and apparently after striking him, reduce him to tears. It ended with Partridge calling Simon a little shit. The pseudo-hypnotic segment gave Partridge a 5-minute opportunity to tell listeners on countless occasions that at school, and having heard him, I was surprised to learn he ever went to school, he was nicknamed Smelly Partridge. How very entertaining. Smelly Partridge is their error, by the way. Mm-hmm. At this stage, I switched off. Of all the communication media, radio is my first love, and usually I have a high regard for the standards set by the BBC. But this example of witless drivel presented by an individual who gives me the impression of being verbally uncontrollable has greatly concerned me. I hope Sir Michael Checkland and Michael Green both caught the programme and share my concern. Please let me have your comments and by copies of this letter, I would make the same request of them. And then Coogan writes, it's a compliment, I suppose, that anybody thought Alan was real.
So did you say at the beginning of that letter that's dated the 9th of December, 1992?
Yeah, so are you thinking they could have recycled this into material in time to put it in episode 6?
No, possibly, but I wasn't thinking that, but that's literally the day after... That episode went out. So that episode went out.
Yeah, that is, you're correct. Yeah.
That episode went out on the 8th, and that letter was written the very next day. Brilliant.
Brilliant.
I also
straight
enjoyed,
in the first class post.
I enjoyed the term verbally uncontrollable.
Yeah.
Very good. So let's move on to Alan's guests. He's got a TV presenter and a fashion designer whose style leaves a lot to be desired. It's Trudy Sky and Yvonne Boyd. So there is a bit of guest crossover here with Know Me, Knowing You, the TV series. And they're on to talk about their celebrity tree planting event. So the walk on music is SOS, which I guess is semi-relevant.
Kind of works in a way.
Unfortunately, there is no such thing as Year of the Tree. I did look that up.
Trudy Sky is the presenter of a show called The Show, a cult show of music, cabaret and floating sculpture. So I think we can guess what Alan's opinion will be. Yeah. He also makes it clear that he thinks that by cult show, it effectively means small viewing figures. Although we do also find out that Fernando and Denise both love the show, which... must irk Alan no end.
That is great that it, like, Alan's obsessed with things like viewing figures, so any opportunity to stick the boot in on viewing figures he'll go for, even though the show's no kind of competition to what he's doing whatsoever. And they talk about Def 2, of course. Now, does everybody remember Def 2?
Very vaguely.
No.
Well, so Def 2 was a programming strand on BBC Two. It was 6 p.m. Mondays to Wednesdays and around from 1988 to 1994, basically aiming for the teenage market, produced by Janet Street Porter. And they included lots of other programs kind of under this Def 2 banner. So there's a nice little Venn diagram of some Monkey Tennis relevant things here, because it included shows like Cyberzone, which we've talked about in the past with Craig Charles and Awooga and Cyber Swindon. Wayne's World, which is one of Adam's favourite things of all time.
Yep,
what's the
fair.
Best thing? Wayne's World. So I just thought it's like, I remember watching that because that's where The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air used to originally air as well.
Jazzy Jeff and the French Prince.
That's the one, yep.
As you said, Yvonne is close or the same to her TV equivalent in the radio show here. And
that's based on Vivian Westwood in real life, was that vaguely?
Yeah, you'd guess
Vivian
so.
Westwood type.
I think there was a Wogan Vivian Westwood interview that is quite, particularly with a TV version. Right. I think it was quite inspired by
So Alan's look comes under the spotlight. He mentions sports casual for the first time ever, and they describe him as more of a Rococo or mock Baroque figure. Dictionary definitions of both those styles for you. Rococo, elaborately ornamental and asymmetrical patterns. Baroque, ornate detail and lavish. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think Alan sort of agrees with them because he doesn't really know what it means.
Yeah, I think he's, yeah.
There's a line from Alan where he says, "I thought my head was going to explode like in that film." I assume that's a reference to Scanners.
Yes.
Is that? Yeah. I assume Jed and, yeah. And Nick have seen.
Yeah, very much so. And Scanners too.
Didn't know there was a Scanners too.
I went on to the Scanners Wikipedia page and there was quite a nice section about how that iconic head explosion was done. So I'll just read that. The iconic head explosion scene was the product of trial and error, eventually settling on a plaster skull and a gelatin exterior packed with latex scraps, some wax and just bits and bobs of lots of stringy stuff that we found in as well as leftover burgers. When other explosive techniques failed to get the desired effect, special effects supervisor Gary Zeller told the crew to roll cameras and get inside the trucks with the doors and windows closed and proceeded to lie down behind the dummy and fire a shotgun at the back of its head.
Oh wow.
Oh wow.
There you go.
I was going to say, because that effect does actually still stand up. It still looks pretty amazing.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So Trudy Anavon's celebrity tree planting event is called Tree Naissance 93.
Awful.
But their slogans, I think, are a little better than their title. They've got germination, not termination.
Yep.
Sapling, not grappling. Nurture, not torture. Not quite as good. Mm. But nowhere near as bad as the one that Alan volunteers. Build a tree. Don't cut it down, for goodness sake.
I just love that. Build a tree.
Yeah.
And they also talk about their hen runs, which is a monthly event where 30 ladies go on a coach trip. Previous participants include Annie Lennox, Pamela Stevenson and Janet Street Porter. I guess they've kind of included those names just to sort of frame these guests, you know, what the kind of the type of person that these guests are supposed to be.
Oh, I just remembered I put a note into, I don't know who Pamela Stevenson is.
That's Billy Connolly's wife.
Yeah, the TV therapist.
And Juliet Stevenson, is that a relation?
She's an actress.
Okay, because that's, I think, one of them just mentions Stevenson's.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I had to look up a couple. I didn't know who Katie Puckrick was or Faye Weldon.
Oh, yeah. So Katie Puckrick, was it, what's that show called? Was it the Girly Show? Is that what it was called?
I've just got note that she was a broadcaster. I didn't go any deeper.
I think listeners will have to forgive us because we're going all the way back to 1993 for this series when a lot of us were sort of 10 years old.
Yeah.
The cultural references do escape us a bit more than they would for I'm Alan Partridge, for example.
Was Katie Puckrick the word as well? Maybe. Right. So it's all that kind of, it is that youth YOOF programming. It's F2, it's the word.
Yeah. And then he's sort of, there's a gentle mocking of those sorts of people where they talk about going to a greasy spoon in Margate and they describe it in terms of the show that they're just kind of, that a regular cafe is just totally foreign to sort of well-meaning posh people.
They're just pretentious pricks, aren't they, really?
They're kind of awful, yeah. It's like, you know, one of the things that they're delighted by was like, oh, the waiter was Italian. It's like, what? Like,
they came all the way from Italy to be a waiter here. Incredible. Like, oh, just fuck off. Also, I like that Alan doesn't want to accept that Yvonne doesn't wear underwear.
He's seen everything. Yeah. Thank goodness it's radio. I never thought I'd say that.
So, question to the group. Have you ever gone commando?
Whatever?
Yeah.
Don't think so. What? When?
I have.
Yeah.
Why?
Why not? It's very freeing.
You're as perplexed as Alan.
Well, what we've discovered is Nick is Alan.
I'm just glad this is a podcast.
Yeah, and Tom and I are Yvonne Boyd. And Nick is Alan. Perplexed. Dreadful.
Maybe I'm going commando now.
Tom, you will not show your veracity on this podcast.
Oh, prove God. It.
No, thank God
it's podcast. I never thought I'd say that. That's the end of those two. And Alan's...
that's the end of them.
Alan's final guest of the series, an 84-year-old man, Lord Morgan of Glossop.
What could go wrong?
Has enjoyed a long political career.
I would just say, before we move on to him, Alan does ask the audience as well to boo as they leave.
Yeah,
which I did also enjoy, just boo them. Like, if he's not happy, he will turn
and
on
actually,
them.
The way he responds to them in general, like, he's totally lost patience with them. He's so dismissive. He's just like, get back to the original question. I suppose it was very wacky. Everyone's probably really trendy, dressed as a banana. He hates them by the end of this interview. But to be honest, I think the audience are with him. Like, they are just kind of pretentious, insufferable people.
I think quite similar to the Yvonne Boyd section in Know Me, Know You, the TV show. Yeah,
You're on side with Alan for this one, aren't you?
You're not on side with Mrs. Whippyhead in the TV show.
But I also just love the way that towards the end, oh God, I can't get it out of my head. I can still see it. That's atrocious. He's absolutely horrified.
Oh, that's atrocious. Yep. So I particularly enjoy Lord Morgan of Glossop's response to Alan's intros. Knowing me, Alan Partridge, knowing you, Lord Morgan of Glossop, aha. To which it seems he says, no.
Brilliant.
Although in the script, that's not what's down, is it?
Yeah, in the Every Ready Word script book, it says hello, but I think that's one of those kind of dictation errors that we picked up on, probably.
That's our theory, isn't it? That perhaps this was Every Ready Word, or this series anyway.
Closed captioning.
Do you think that basically when someone was doing this, they just thought, oh, I've got a bit of a cavalier attitude to this. I need to be out of here in half an hour.
That's just what you would do.
Yeah, that's your approach.
Not thinking that years and years down the line, someone would be pouring over.
They never would have seen this coming.
No.
I don't know. I mean, there's background noise going on because the audience are clapping. So I guess if somebody wasn't paying proper attention, they might think he said hello and it's been a bit masked. But I think on review, he does just say, nope.
It makes more sense.
That's more in keeping.
Yeah.
Hello would actually be far too polite for what we learn about this character.
Did anyone else have to look up if Glossop was a place, or had you heard Glossop of Glossop?
I've heard of Glossop.
Mm. Okay. I'd never heard of it, but yeah, it's a market town in Derbyshire.
Great.
There we go.
And now we know.
One of Alan's first thick questions is, you've just published your autobiography. What's that about?
Presumably his life and times.
Again, bit of a cheap, easy gag, but
that is true.
Yeah, I like it.
Still, it's all right.
It's in keeping with character, isn't it? So I don't think you can hate on it.
They try and bond. Well, Alan tries to bond with him over his love of whiskey because he says the only friend a man needs is the bottle. So Alan says, "I hope you enjoyed the bottle of 10-year-old scotch we left in your dressing room." And he's drunk it already, and then calls Alan an ass. Yeah. Not for the last time.
Well, Alan asks him if he enjoyed it, and he just says, "Piss." As well as describing the whiskey as piss, he's obviously quite keen to describe Alan as an arse, and everybody else they talk about as an arse as well, which I quite enjoyed.
You're an arse.
So that's the thing about, what's your book about? It's about my life, you arse. I think is that the first time he calls Alan an arse, maybe, but it definitely won't be the last.
It certainly feels like Alan's a bit more tolerant here than he is on the TV show with other guests and Forbes McAllister. I think he's sort of... recognises that because this is a titled gentleman in his 80s that he's sort of prepared to let him get away with a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's an older, more titled man, he's more tolerant of them, and if it's a similar situation but with a female, he'll kind of want to get to know them or spend time with them, but if it's someone of a lower status, he's got no tolerance.
But I think with the characterisation we're given of Lord Morgan, like, there's no way he's going to change his behaviour just because Alan asks him to be a bit more polite or something. I mean, at the intro, Alan says he reduced David Frost to a gibbering wreck of tears. It did make me think, is Alan really deluded enough to think that he's going to fare any better as well?
Than the man who interviewed Richard Nixon.
Exactly.
It emerges that Lord Morgan of Glossop is an outspoken defender of pornography. We have guests come on with fairly strong, incorrect opinions, but these are among the worst I think we've heard. He says that, is it not the case that sex degrades women if it's any good? And then he goes into, I like those prostitutes you had on before.
Which is very much like Forbes McAllister in the TV version saying, hello, lesbians.
Hello, lesbians.
Yeah, but you know, whatever a man wants to get up to in his attic is his business, I feel. I agree.
So, yeah, but maybe just don't bring it on national TV.
It emerges that Alan's written his own Who's Who entry. And at this point, I wasn't totally clear on first listen whether Lord Morgan was dying or falling asleep. I mean, obviously we know how it ends, but it did seem like it could have gone one of two ways.
Yeah, my immediate thing is like when you hear someone in that situation kind of struggling for breath or coughing, I think you know what's going to happen. Well, I thought, yeah, I was confident I knew what was going
to
happen.
Well, I think if you listen to how this episode plays out, it definitely sounds like the audience is slightly ahead of the gag compared to the listener might be. So whether Patrick Marlborough is kind of doing acting something out a bit more, because he actually, Lord Morgan only coughs three times before he's dead. But as soon as that first cough happens, you start to hear a bit of audience tittering. Like, I think they can see where it's going to go.
It doesn't really build up much as well. It's kind of, it is quite quick and quite sudden. But obviously because it's radio, we don't really see much of it. You're just going off the noises. And that's probably the point around the audience getting to the gag before you do. But it is quite sudden. There's not much of a build up to it. He's sort of, you know, within a couple of minutes, that's it, done.
That's just death though, Nick. That's how it works. That's life, man.
three minute you're here and you're gone.
I think I hoped that he was falling asleep just because I didn't want it to be such a crossover with Know Me, Know You TV series, but I guess it's kind of inevitable.
But then that's obviously, you've got to think that's having your awareness of the TV series, knowing that before the radio.
Yeah, of course.
Before having heard this. So
that's just what I was hoping for, basically.
Yeah. And I guess this is too subtle for TV. You couldn't just have him cough for three times and then die. Like, they had to make it more dramatic for TV. And obviously, Alan shoots Forbes McAllister.
Yeah, but again, I think it's not even thinking about what works on TV, what works on radio. It's more about if they've made this show in 92 and then they're making the TV equivalent in 94, they know they have to ramp up what's happened as well. They can't just try and redo it. So it's not necessarily about it has to have more drama. It's not necessarily that it has to have more drama. It just has to be quite markedly different as well.
Right. Yeah. I suppose you think, you notice if any of the characters in the radio series are repeated in the TV series, it is escalated, isn't it? So the hypnotist hypnotist becomes more of a thing where he's tied to a spinning wheel and there's knives being thrown at him. And Yvonne Boyd has got her whole kind of like macabre like catwalk, and then Forbes McAllister's shot rather than just dies of a heart attack. So yeah, they've heightened everything, haven't they?
I would say even if you think perhaps the payoff is a bit weak in terms of him dying quite quickly, I do really like this guest segment. I think that the rhythm and the tempo of the script is really good. Like, the exchanges between Alan and Lord Morgan, I think it's an example of when the show's kind of at its best. It's things like, you know, are you a man of your word? No. It's just, you know, it's really quick and just very funny, I think. And I think that's when his show is sometimes at its best.
Yeah, I think we'll get onto it when we sum up, but I think this might be my favourite episode in the series. Maybe.
I mean, save it for the wrap up, but it's certainly not mine.
save it.
So Lord Morgan's died, and it's an actual bombshell. But for once, Alan is reluctant to use the bombshell quote. So for now, he just says, "Lord Morgan, rest in peace." Aha! Important to add the Brand Partridge to the end of that, and then attempts a minute silence on radio, which is a terrible idea. I mean, most radio stations have a system whereby automatic music kicks in if you leave too much dead air. So he then has to speak periodically to prove this. Still broadcasting, so it's just a minute silence interspersed with him saying, "This is Radio 4 with Alan Partridge."
It's like a minute silence that never actually has any silence,
and also contains a very long list of service stations at one point as well.
Yeah, on the M1 and the M6.
So before that, you have Alan says, "I drape my sweater over his head to preserve some dignity as Lord Morgan sits immovable beneath the hastily improvised Pringle shroud." Now, I read this website that I mentioned the other week, Some of the Corpses Are Amusing, which is basically like a comedy blog that was active in the early 2000s. I think it was on there they wrote about Patrick Marlborough was quite visibly kind of like laughing. So apparently Coogan improvised putting taking the Pringle jumper off and putting it over him.
Nice.
So it became less distracting to the audience. And again, I think that might be why perhaps the audience laughter is kind of ramping up a little bit. But again, that's one website that I've read it on. So whether, you know, how factual that is, I don't have a source to cross reference with or anything.
I like to think it's true.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds plausible. It sounds plausible, doesn't it? And it's also worth pointing out, this is where we get official confirmation of Alan's birthday, which I think in previous records we've discussed. We kind of knew what year was his birthday was, but we didn't know the actual date. But here it is very clearly the 2nd of April, 1955. And yeah, having been through this series, the ages do stack up with all the other Partridge output. So they've kept that consistent. They haven't changed his age or moved things around to make him younger or older, depending on what they're doing.
There's a little bit in iPartridge about the end of the series and when Lord Morgan dies. In the previous paragraph, he just mentions about the death of Lord Morgan of Glossop. And then he says, "I don't think anyone was too upset. Lord Morgan's family began legal action and asked some searching questions about indemnity insurance. But I don't think anyone can seriously believe we were responsible. Can you imagine? Cause of death? Chat? I don't think so." No, far from it being a downbeat end to the series, I was in high spirits. Our final show had seen a guest appearance from Tony Hares, then acting commissioning director for BBC TV, not the actual commissioning editor, and a man who frankly made Adam Walters look like a pathetic radio idiot. Tony and I hadn't met before, but knowing he was important, I'd kept an eye on him and admired him from afar, most notably in the BBC canteen from behind a newspaper.
Brilliant.
A lovely detail. So yeah, he says he was in high spirits, but actually in the show itself, he's ending the show by saying, on this very somber bombshell, and then there's the sign off.
Well, I wonder, could they have levelled that Pear Tree Productions are partially responsible because they've allowed Lord Morgan to drink an entire bottle of 10-year-old scotch before doing the show?
There's got to be some level of like...
That can't be good if you're 84 to drink an entire bottle of scotch.
No, but I don't know how much you can blame Pear Tree for that. It was a kind gesture and you've got to have some self-responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they wouldn't be culpable, but I mean, whether there's a bit more could have been made of that in the script, and perhaps there was a longer version and it's, you know, I don't think it's
something has to give in 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
There's some more classic Alan delusion in I, Partridge when Tony leaves the studio. He catches up to Tony in the car park and says, Tony, are you going to put this baby on the goggle box or what? And the response is, we'll see, he said, which at first I thought was worryingly non-committal. But then I thought about it. His specific choice of words... See, he'd said, not hear, see. He was talking in visual terms. This, I felt, was as sure as him saying, in code, your show will be seen on the television. I punched the air and whooped before lowering my voice out of respect for Lord Morgan's nearby relatives. The next day, I walked into Pear Tree Productions and doubled everyone's pay, then sacked Lisa.
Oh, was Lisa the researcher that booked the guest on? Yeah, brilliant. That's so well tied together. Also, of course, I like the idea that it's plausible that you could say, are you going to put this baby on the goggle box or what? And a legitimate response would be, we'll hear.
That's a great point. Okay, so when Alan's doing the minute silence with no actual silence, as discussed, towards the end of that section, he talks about he's listing all the service stations and he mentions Julie's Pantry in Chippenham. Had anybody ever heard of Julie's Pantry?
No, but was this a 90s thing?
Don't worry, Adam, I've done the research.
Thank God.
Julie's Pantry was created in 1979 by Trust House Forte, and it was described as an exciting American-style food catering establishment. And it was introduced at a time when motorway catering was generally a sit-down affair. Sadly, though, in 1989, Forte became more invested in fast food and they introduced KFC, often alongside a Julie's. And by 1998, all Julie's pantries had been replaced by Burger King. Many of those replacement Burger Kings are still in exactly the same place today. Now, often in Monkey Tennis, we like to throw kind of a random question to the group. So, and, you know, just depending on what the subject might be. So in this instance, I'm just thinking Julie's Pantry... Burger King. Now, I don't really have any interesting Burger King stories, but I don't really want to end the episode on that tone. So, question to the group. Does anybody have any interesting Burger King stories?
No, not really.
I've never worked there.
I've certainly never...
It's not me.
I mean, nothing comes to mind apart from the time I set one on fire.
Oh, okay, brilliant. Adam, why don't you tell us more about the time you set a Burger King on fire?
I don't know the story. Brilliant.
All right, very briefly, just to explain,
I don't know the details of this story either, so I'm looking forward to finding out more.
I was working at a regional branch of Burger King at the beginning of my career. I hadn't yet attained the lofty title of service expert, and you're about to find out why. Part of the job was cleaning out the deep fat fryers, or basically draining them of dirty oil and replacing them with new oil. I was given conflicting sets of instructions by two different people in a high pressure retail environment. And what happened is I took the greatest hits of both sets of instructions and emptied the fryer, turned the temperature back on, did not put any new oil in it, and went back to my washing up, noticed about 10 minutes later that there were flames licking the top of the restaurant.
So it really was flame grilled.
Yep. Quick, put this out, they exclaimed, before the emergency foam system kicks in.
Wow.
Did we put it out before the foam kicked in? We did not.
So brilliant, then you just had like a foam party in Burger King. Yeah.
Did we go home at 2 a.m. that night? Yes, we did. Did I apologise in the cab home to my boss saying, sorry, I set the restaurant on fire? Yes, I did.
Amazing.
Great. I think that went as well as I could have hoped.
And on that flame grilled bombshell, we've come to the end of the episode. Do join us next week, though. There is one more episode. You might be thinking we're at the end of Know Me, Knowing You radio, but there is the Knowing Me, Knowing You documentary behind the scenes of Knowing Me, Knowing You. Easy for me to say. In addition, we thought we would save our thoughts about the series as a whole and wrap them around our discussion of that documentary. So join us next week for that. The latest in the current series of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, it's thepartridgepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, @thepartridgepod, @monkeytennispod, and the Monkey Tennis hotline is 07923 600 017. If you like what you hear and you've been enjoying us perhaps recently or even since 2016 when we started this, you can buy us a coffee at ko-fi.com/monkeytennis to say thanks for all of our hard work, or, you know, just drop us a comment and say, no coffee for you, it's rubbish. I don't care. Anyway, thanks so much for listening to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. Thanks again and goodbye.
You're an arse.
Lord Morgan, rest in peace. Aha.
Welcome to Knowing Me, Knowing You. Knowing me, Alan Partridge. Knowing you, the audience. I've got a hit on my hands.
Monkey tennis?
Is that good therapy or balmy old cack?
Conrad Knightson.
Monkey tennis?
I'm Alan Partridge.
Why are you such a prick?
Lots of meaty chat.
Monkey tennis?
I just want you to admit that you hate Les Dennis.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
Monkey tennis?
Okay, I'm in Manhattan. What do I do now?
You are a little shit.
Monkey tennis?
That in England is a whore.
I've taken drugs!
Lord Morgan.
If you speak again, I will physically hit you.
And on that bombshell,
monkey tennis?
Thank goodness it's radio. I never thought I'd say that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.